Half-Guarded Hour is recorded before a live studio audience. Everybody, I have on the line with me right now Daniel Vonderlei. I've known him for over 5 years, 6 years now. He was my first real jiu-jitsu instructor. He's legitimately one of the greatest black belts in the world. He's a multiple-time Pan American Games champion. He placed second in the worlds. He's done pretty much everything you can do. This upcoming September, he'll be competing in the World Championships for the Masters Division. And you should definitely, no matter what you do, visit DanielVonderlei.com. Donate money. Do anything you can to help him out, because there are so many scumbags in the world of jiu-jitsu and MMA, and Daniel is one of the really good guys, and I'm so pleased to have him on the show. So how are you doing tonight, Daniel?
Hey, I'm doing very good, very well. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing fantastic, and I've been kind of tinkering with interviews here and there with friends and stuff like that at halfguarded.com for a while, but I always knew I wanted to have somebody special for my first real big guest, and I wanted it always to be you, and so I'm very happy that you're able to do this tonight. And I guess the first question I'll start off with is a very basic one, which is,
okay,
why did you start jiu-jitsu?
Well, this is a funny story, because I never wanted to do jiu-jitsu before. I thought like jiu-jitsu was so kind of like a complicated, like a guy grab each other's, I'm like, man, I grew up in Recife, northeast from Brazil. In Brazil, and I used to live by the beach. I like surf, and do soccer. And a bunch of my friends that used to do jiu-jitsu, and they used to invite me all the time. Say, hey, man, you got to come by. Let's go in the gym. Let's do some grappling. Let's do some jiu-jitsu. So by the time, I don't understand much about it. I remember that Royce Gracie did it very well in UFC. So that's when become like a really big deal in 1994, I believe. But I didn't know much about it, so I didn't want to go. And one of my good friends, his name is Evil, so he kind of tricked me one day. So he was on the beach, and he invited me to go just to pick it up something in the gym. So I get in his car. So we get there. I see a bunch of my friends over there. And when they look at me walking in the gym, and they're like, whoa, Daniel finally got here. So today you're going to train with us. I said, no, guys, you guys totally wrong. I just come here with Evil. And he's going to pick something up, and we're going to go to the beach. So the beach looks really nice, really warm, and we're going to go back there. And then Evo get an extra gear in his backpack, and I didn't know. So he said, no, dude, I brought you here today, and everybody's expecting you to train today. So I used to work out, do a lot of, pull-ups, and, some surfing. My body looked pretty good, and I thought about fighting, I can beat anybody. I got hands, I got kicks. I used to do capoeira when I was a teenager. So they finally got me on the mat. I put the gi, it was so weird, they like the heavy gi on me. Back in the days, they didn't have those lightweight gi, so whatever. I said, okay. I remember a good friend of mine, his name is Leonardo Leo. And this guy's probably like light featherweight, but he was purple belt. And that was my first round, actually. They demonstrated a few things for me first. I can't forget about that. That was the first technique that I learned. It was an armbar from guard. I bet a lot of people learned that from the first class as well. And then a flower sweep. So we demonstrated the move, we practiced for a couple of times. So I was like kind of, all right, let's go for the real time. So what are we going to do? What are we going to fight, He said, oh, Daniel, we can punch and kick here, but you're a strong guy. I'm going to put with the Leo. And Leo looked pretty small. I said, okay, I can grapple with this guy. So I started grappling with him, and he once showed me that he could got me with the same move that we just practiced that day. And that was pretty, very nice, So when he put me in the armbar and he stretched my arm, and he, I didn't know how to tap out very well, they kind of told me how to do it, but I didn't believe at the beginning. So when I see my arms was all the way deep, and I was kind of screaming, hey, that's it, And then that time I'm like, holy crap, that thing is really works, you know, because it's, I believe it, by the time I was like 100 and maybe 178 pounds. And this guy was just like a light featherweight, you know. So when he got me an arm bar, so I was keep going. I kind of used all my strength in that day. And I kind of enjoyed a little bit because I got beat up by this little dude and was sit down. And then we started talking about, and then I really realized, I said, man, that's all about technique, man, because I know I can bench more weights than you. I can pick you up here, but you got me, you know, you got my arm, and then I couldn't do anything. I couldn't get out. And I didn't know what level, belt level was, you know, but purple belt, you know, like when you got your purple belt, you actually on a really good level. So to be, you know, you can catch brown belts, you can catch black belts if you have a good purple belt. This guy was pretty good. It was a legit competitor. So, but anyways, that was the first time that I actually trained. It wasn't a full class. I got that like a little late, you know, and those guys demonstrated that move, that arm bar, the bottom, like a guard arm bar, and then a flower sweep. And then I think, man, I really like the move, and I'm still using that. That's the move that I most win my tournaments, you know, all about arm bars and triangles and stuff like leg locks too, but I really like still my favorite move. You know, I didn't met my professor that day, Gutenberg Mello. He wasn't there, you know, but we have this little crowd, and one of my our instructors, his name is Carlos. So I never forget about that guy too. He kicked my ass for so many years, you know, and then I just fell in love with the sport. I remember that was a Saturday, right? So after we went back to the beach, so everybody went back to you. A few guys was making fun of me, you know, because I got tapped out. But anyways, I say, you know what, guys? Monday, I see you guys again. So I get back on Monday, and then I had the opportunity to meet my professor, Gutenberg. And he's just sounds like a really nice guy. And then he talked to me. He explained a little bit about jiu-jitsu because the other guys didn't want to expand much. They want to beat my ass. But, yeah, it was a good opportunity for me to believe in jiu-jitsu, because by the time I was like, I thought I was a tough dude, you know. You know, when I grew up, I've been in a few street fights, and I thought I could beat anybody, you know, stuff like that. And then I was totally wrong. So that was a great experience.
Yeah, it's, I mean, your story is similar to, I think, a lot of people that don't, like, I'm a little different because I grew up watching UFC, because I kind of showed up in jiu-jitsu and I knew I would lose. I knew I wasn't a badass. But you kind of got taught that lesson in humility. But what's really crazy is that within 5 years, you got your black belt. Isn't that correct?
Yes, yes. The point, like, the reason why I got my black belt is because I become an instructor, right? That's why I kind of get that really fast, you know. Like, I believe I spent almost 3 years on my blue belt. The white to blue was only 8 months. I did very well. I start dedicating myself right away, you know, in the first couple of weeks, you know. I see the how jiu-jitsu was very effective, you know, so I started to realize, like, man, it's all about technique. I got to understand the game to do that very well. So I got my blue belt. When I got my blue belt, I thought it was good too. That's when I really started enjoying compete, but I won a tournament as a white belt, and in a blue belt, I lost 4 tournaments in the world, so that's why I'm like, make me thinking about, I got to go back and see what I might do wrong, because, you know, like, I think I do very good at the gym, but in the tournament is totally different. You know, the adrenaline, you know, you see a lot of people around, people yelling. Brazil back in the days, like, people used to be really close to the match, you know what I mean? Kind of screaming, yelling for you, you know, coaching, and the your opponent's teammates, you know, all about, like, saying bad things about you, you know what I mean, like, oh, beat them up, you know, like, oh, you're trying to pass the guard. They used to call it, like, sing a little song, and all, se tentar passar, vai bater ou vai voar, that means, like, if you try to pass, you're gonna tap or you're gonna fly. That's pretty funny, but, yes, you know, I lost 4 tournaments. I always say that to my students, because not too. Some people just dismotivated when they lose the tournaments. And then I say, yeah, after that, I won 8. So it's not exactly number double, but it was all about the dedication, the hard work. The first time that I lost really bad in a blue belt. I got tapped out. But the second time, I lost by points. The third time, I lost by little less points. And then the fourth time, I realized, like, I lost by advantage. So I realized I was getting better, you know, even I didn't win, but I was getting better. And then I improve. And that way, I expanded a long time. I believe it was almost 3 years in the blue belt. And I got my purple belt. So in the purple belt, I was undefeated. I'd only compete twice, but Gutenberg just promoted me kind of a little quick. I don't know why he promoted me. I never asked for promotions. You know, I never have a stripe in my whole life in jiu-jitsu when I got my black belt. So I got my first, second, and third degree under Carson Gracie Jr. But anyways, I was purple belt, and I had the opportunity to come over here to America to visit my mom. You know, I didn't know that Carson was living in Chicago. So my mom moved to Chicago in 2002. And, you know, I came in 2004 to visit my mom, end of 2004. So, and Gutenberg surprised me with the brown belt. By the time I was already his assistant coach at the gym, you know, I had a morning class. I was running the morning class with my purple belt. And, you know, I was doing a good job. So I started making a good students, good white and blue belts. And, you know, Gutenberg just thought like, dude, you know, I don't know if I'm going to see you again. So this is your brown belt. So good luck. And then, and that was a pretty like, I was like surprised, you know, I thought like, dude, I believe I was only 11 months in the purple belt, but I compete twice and I first place twice. And I didn't know if I'm going to come back or not. I came here to visit my mom. And by that time, I was having a little issues with my wife, you know, and we kind of broke up for a little bit. And when I get here, so I met Carson Gracie. So the first thing that I did when I met Carson Gracie, so I couldn't believe that I see Grandmaster Carson Gracie in front of me. So just know him about, you know, from TV and the magazines, and Gutenberg always talking about him because Gutenberg trained with him for his whole life. So that was pretty like, actually I cried when I saw him, man. It was like, I don't know, like the way that he looked at me, he just like started speaking Portuguese with me. He didn't know me, but he kind of figured I was Brazilian, and I was like, hey, what are you doing here? I'm like, well, it's like I'm here to see you. So, and I had my mom with me, and, you know, he used to be a really nice guy. You know, he started talking to my mom, and, you know, so anyways, we're talking about the way that I got my black belt very quick. So I kind of went back home because I got my things together with my wife. So in 3 months later, I spent this 3 months with Carson, trained with him. Actually, by the time my mom has a job, and she got to move to North Carolina. So I was supposed to go with my mom, and Carson just like, dude, what are you going to do? So you brown belt. He kind of liked the way that I, you know, I used to do my things, you know, sparring and help the guys with technique. And he liked it. Why you don't stay here in Chicago? I said, no, I got to go with my mom. So I don't have a job. I have nothing to do. He said, well, why, you know, just stay with me. I was like, what? Yeah. I said, yeah, stay with me. I live by myself, so you can stay in my apartment, and, you know, you're going to help me out with the no-gi class. Mm-hmm. I say, really, Master Carson? He like, yeah, yes, and he look at my mom and say, hey, you know what? I'm going to adopt your son right now. So and my mom couldn't believe, you know, my mom kind of didn't want it, you know, but I look at my mom and say, you know what, Mom? This is a dream come true. You know, I always want to meet Grandmaster Carson Grace, and now he invite me to stay with him, so I'm not going to let the opportunity go away, no?
Oh, for sure.
But anyways.
I mean, yeah, for sure. I mean, and Carlson Gracie Sr., for anybody that doesn't know, I mean, he's pretty much one of the greatest figures in the history of jiu-jitsu. That's like, if you like baseball, if Babe Ruth said, hey, do you want to, you know, play baseball with me? If you play soccer, it's like Pele saying, you want to play soccer with me? It's like, yeah. Carlson Gracie Sr., like, if he says, hey, come stay with me and train, you don't have a choice. Like, you have to train with a guy that promoted the Nogueira brothers, Murillo Bustamante, Ricardo Arona, Valide Ismael. I mean, everybody he's ever trained was pretty much a god, and he saw you and must have, you know, seen something really special in you. And to give you that kind of, you know, respect.
Yeah, it was pretty funny because, and that night when I met him, you know, so And I told them I was a Gutenberg student, you know, brown belt, and I didn't bring my gi in that night. I just came by, you know, trying to talk to him because, you know, I didn't want to just kind of trying to come in and take the first class right away. You know, I didn't sign up, so I kind of really respectful guy. And first thing he asked me, like, you have Gutenberg's number? I said, yes, I do. So let's call Gutenberg. So back in the days, we used to use those, like, cars to call, you know, those, like, a phone card. That you know, he called and Gutenberg answered the phone call and like, hey, hello. And they like, hey, hello, what? You know who is speaking with you? And Gutenberg's like, and he put that phone in a speakerphone. I was listening to the whole conversation, right? And then he started talking with Gutenberg. I have a guy right here. His name is Daniel. And he's telling me that he's a brown belt under you. Who is that guy? Man, I was like, what's going on? You know, like he put that in the speakerphone. So I was listening to everything what Gutenberg's going to say. And then thank God Gutenberg is always, we having a good relationship. And Gutenberg started talking really good about me. And that made me feel amazing. You know, like, he's like, oh, Daniel's my guy. You know, like very respectful. He knows jiu-jitsu. He helped me here for a little while. So if you have no opportunity to let Daniel demonstrate anything, you're going to see that he's legit, like, you know, the jiu-jitsu that you taught me, and, you know, I just teach Daniel the same way. So he's a legit Carson Gracie jiu-jitsu. So next day, Carson just made me teach a class. That was so crazy. Like, when I get there on the first day, like, hey, dude, you demonstrate a move here. I remember, like, it was yesterday, man. I was doing a single leg and then one single leg variation because I didn't want to go too far with something complicated and mess around and then make it, like, a thing that I didn't know much about. But I remember, I'm never going to forget about that. I demonstrated these two takedowns, and he really liked it. And then he started, you know, that's how when we really start our relationship as a friends and professor and student as well.
Yeah, and again, I know that people will say that I'm biased because I've known you for so long and things like this. But I can really say that there are people who are really good at jiu-jitsu, and you're obviously very good at competing. Like I said earlier, you've won the Pan American Games. You've come in, you know, silver medal in the World Championships. But, you know, there's a lot of guys who are very good at competing, but they don't teach very well. And you, however, are just one of the greatest teachers I've ever been around. Even now, like, you haven't been in Chicago for a couple years now, and yet every time I go to the gym, other black belts that I you know, train with, if it's, you know, the legendary Tommy G or Guy Africano, you know, they'll always be like, hey, remember when Daniel showed us this? Like, your ability to know the technique and to really break it down is really, like, as good as you are at competing, you're an even better teacher. And I think that's it's kind of a special a skill that you have.
Yes, that's why Gutenberg find out, like, right away when I was blue belt, because that's why I got my black belt so quick, too. So Gutenberg made me help him when I was blue belt only, I remember. So I was helping the white belts, and you're like, man, you remember every detail that I show about the techniques, you know, because I keep seeing a lot of teachers, black belts, actually, you know, they teach, and sometimes they don't break the details. They don't really show all the details. And Gutenberg's like, man, you remember everything. So he always put me in the side with the white belts. I was helping him out. You know, I got my purple belt, and I started developing, improving more and more my teacher, instructing skills. And he like, man, you know, but just back in the conversation about the got my black belt in 5 years. So I got to get back to Brazil because I got my things together with my wife. And unfortunately, Carson passed away, so I got my relationship with Carson Gracie Jr. as well. And Carson Gracie Jr. called me when I was back in Brazil, and he like, Daniel, you know, man, my dad passed away. You know, the last guy who spent time with him, you know, was you, and he kind of really trusts you in a few different ways, not just because you give an instruction very well. So I kind of really kind of lost here. You know, I can't teach. I go in the gym every time I see my father around, you know, like, it was kind of really, really hard for Junior.
Yeah.
And he asked me if I want to go back to Chicago. So I remember I got my wife in the couch seat with my little guy, Gabriel Wanderley. And then it was very little. He was really little that time. And then when he asked me, like, can you come back? I look at my wife and I look at Gabriel. And, man, I just remembered what Carson had done for me. You know, he was super nice to me. So I was like, I answered even before asking my wife permission to go. You know what I mean? I said, yes, man, I go. You know, for your dad, I will do everything that I can, you know, to help you, your dad. Because he kind of made me feel really welcome in Chicago. He gave me, you know, he shared his apartment with me, you know what I mean? I actually was with him when he started to get sick. I didn't know he's going to go too far. And Carson used to don't like to go in the doctor. You know, he always about to take care of, you know, when he was sick with the Gracie diet.
Yeah.
And I just felt like I owned him, you know what I mean? The a little bit, you know, I want to kind of help him out and pay back. And then Junior said, yes. But here's the thing, you can't come back here and then just be in a brown belt, you know. And Junior know my Professor Gutenberg for so many years, you know, that I bet Gutenberg saw Junior's growing up, you know what I mean? Gutenberg's right. Older than him. And he kind of called Gutenberg and said, hey, Gutenberg, I don't want to pass over. I don't want to cross the line, you know what I mean? I know Daniel's your student, but I'm invite Daniel to come back here to Chicago, and I want him to be a Carson Grace instructor. So I want to be, you know, not promote Daniel as a black belt. I want to ask you to do this because you give his all his belts. So, and I felt like, man, I kind of, you know, I felt really new. I think I was brown belt for like a year and a half, something like that. And I compete as well as a brown belt. I lost one tournament. I remember that, and I won two. And he just like, and I compete as well in Niagara when I was here with Carson. So that day I lost as well. I got second place. I lost. I couldn't make the final match because a wrestler hurt my neck in a semifinal. So I couldn't make the final match. I remember I gave up, but I won three matches that day. It was pretty tough, you know, pretty good division, that expert division. That was my first time in the Naga. And I kind of felt like, man, you know, I don't know if I'm ready for a black belt. So, and Gutenberg just promote me, you know, like he said, hey, man, the goal, good luck. So, but that's what everything started for me. That's when I won my best tournaments in my whole career, you know. So, well, as a black belt, I never competed Worlds, Pan Ams, or National, something like that. I won the state twice, but never, you know, I never competed in the big tournament. So, as a black belt, I start doing the tournaments, and that's when I got better accomplishments, you know. So, I won Pan American Nogi twice. I placed actually in the world's no-gi two times, a silver medal and one time a bronze. A national second place as well. Oh, man, multiple times an Open champion. I won a New York Open, Dallas Open, Chicago Open, you know. So that's when I got the best tournaments in my, you know, in my whole career. So as a black belt, so that makes
it's weird because, like, you're kind of – In a weird way, you're like the last great student almost of Carlson Grayson Sr. Like, you're the last guy that he almost kind of like trusted, and you're kind of carrying on his legacy in a way.
The Half Guarded Hour here at HalfGuarded.com is proudly brought to you by our sponsor, smoking. While we cannot legally tell people under the age of 18 to smoke, we can say that anyone between the ages of 14 and 23 instantly looks cooler if they do. So when you're thinking about your future, don't. Instead, grab a pack, light up, and look like the badass you always imagined yourself to be. Sure, one day you'll be drowning your own fluids, but that's later, and this is now. Smoking. It's not a habit. It's just cool.
So anyway, we're still talking with Daniel Vonderly here after this short commercial break we just did. I'll pretend like there was a commercial I threw in there or something. It doesn't matter. After you train with Carlson, you obviously had your black belt. You trained here in Chicago for several years. You taught. You're a legitimate legend within all the schools here. And then a couple of years ago, Duke Rufus contacted you and said, hey, do you want to be the head instructor for my jiu-jitsu under Rufus Sport in Milwaukee? And Ken, you know, when you were approached by that, what were your first thoughts of the idea of becoming a full-time coach of mixed martial arts, you know, high-level, world-class fighters, which, you know, I mean, you'd been teaching people here in Chicago, and they were good, but suddenly you went from teaching people like me, who's just, you know, some idiot on the street, to Anthony Pettis and Ben Askren and Sergio Pettis and Eric Koch and all that. Like, were you scared? What were your first thoughts when you kind of got that initial call?
Man, this is it's another story too. I met Duke at my first time when I came. My first time, I was brown belt still. Duke used to train Stefan Born. When Stefan was fighting the first show, the Ute May Fighter number one, right? At that time, I remember Miguel Torres was training over there. You know, I have several friends that I, you know, met at that time. My friend Robert Ramirez was training at the same time with us. The last Carson Grace, the guy that Carson Grace promoted, the last black belt, his name is Carlos Rodriguez. He was training with us too. A big Brazilian dude that I remember, his name is Gustavo Gusin. You know, we always trained together. And Duke Roof, who was driving all the way from Milwaukee to Chicago to help Stefan, you know, for his fights. So I met Duke at that time, but I couldn't barely communicate with him because, you know, when I moved to America for the first time to visit my mom, I never took any English class. I kind of still don't speak English very well, but I'm, you know, improving a little bit, trying to get better. But I met Duke at that time, but we never communicated, right? So Duke saw one of my posts on the Facebook because I used to do work in two different places, you know, Carson, place and in another place,
right.
And I kind of quit my job in the other place, the place that used to teach you.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
And then he saw the post and it kind of like, man, you know, he hit me up. I'm like, dude, Duke Roos, I can't believe. Actually, a few years later, I saw Duke in a small tournament, you know, that I brought my son to compete in the tournament. And then he kind of remembered me and said, hey, man, what's going on? I remember you from back in the days, you know, training with staff. And I'm like, yes, man, I remember. And it was kind of fun, you know. So when he hit me up, I'm like, dude, he's like, hey, Daniel, what's going on? You know, do you want to come over here? And can we have a conversation? So, yes, of course, about, like, you know, you want to be my jiu-jitsu coach because Duke always trying to have jiu-jitsu in his place. But I don't know what's going on with the other coach. You know, it never came true. Then nobody ever like really spent that much time at Rufus Sport. And he brought me in. And now I was kind of like, first he had the idea to open the second Rufus Sport. And then he was like, okay, I need a jiu-jitsu program. So when I get there on the first night, and I remember, man, it was a lot of people. I think we got 40 people on the mat. No one of the fighters was there in that night, just kind of a few fighters, but not of those famous fighters, right? So I rolled with everybody. So I kind of did very well that night. I was very inspired, you know. And Duke looked at me like, man, can you come back tomorrow and, you know, just roll with my fighters? Not roll with my fighters. Can you kind of teach a class for them just to see, like, you know? I say, yes, of course I can do. Because he kind of thought the legacy of Carson Grace, all the lineage, is kind of, you know, following the same style. And he really liked the Carson style because Carson was one of the first Gracies who started finish fights by ground and pound, you know. And then he was the first Gracie who fought without a kimono, you know, with Nogi. So he kind of like, can you do that to me? I was like, damn. Yes, of course. A little back before Rufus Sport, I remember his gym used to call Duke Roof's gym. And then I went there one time as well with my friend Fabio Prado, who teaches Ryan Faber, Joseph Benavides, all those Chad Mendes from Team Alpha Male. And we kind of went there just to train, but we trained separate. So I was training with Team Alpha Male, and then Duke Roof's gym was training another mat. So when I saw Duke again on that day, you know, it was way before he invited me to come by and be a jiu-jitsu instructor. But I kind of knew, like, all the stuff guys, you know, Ben Askren. I was already an Anthony Pettis fan, you know, when I see, you know, a few of his fights on the WC, because by the time I was hanging out a lot with Miguel Torres, kind of help him out too. You know, he was coming by and training with me a lot because at that time, I believe he was only purple belt. And then I kind of help him out. He was purple belt under a senior, and then I help him out to get his brown belt and his black belt under Carson Gracie Jr. Actually, he got his black belt in my seminar. So he invited me for a seminar. I brought Junior with me. So, and Junior promoted him to black belt on that day. But anyways, so I went there on the second day, and man, it was all new for me. Like, you know, like I kind of didn't know what to do very well because I don't know the guy styles, you know, like the Duke Rufus fighters is all famous by be strikers, you know, and then I know Ben Askren is one of the best grapplers in the world because he's an amazing wrestler, Olympic wrestler, and I kind of like, man, what am I going to do here? So I look around all those guys, and I start like, okay, let's do a warm-up, and start put the things together, and then I start like, I thought like to earn the respect for those guys, I kind of have to roll with all of those guys and do well, or otherwise they're not going to take me very serious. So, and then I did very well that day. So right away, so in the nighttime, Duke Roof called me back and say, hey man, you know, you can be the head coach here. I was like, what? So I couldn't believe it, you know what I mean? At the beginning, he wanted me to do a little jiu-jitsu program. And of course, he already knew that he wants the second tenches make his guys step in the next level,
right,
and jiu-jitsu. So, and that was pretty good for me. So I was doing back and forth, Chicago to Milwaukee, Chicago to Milwaukee. And at one point, I couldn't handle that, you know what I mean? So that's what he offered me a very good opportunity with a good salary as well, you know,
right,
that I couldn't say no. And Carson Gracie Jr. actually gave me all the support. He like, man, that's a great opportunity for you, Daniel. Great opportunity for your family. So take it, you know. I have Carson Gracie Jr. as like my, man, a big brother for me. You know, like he always has my back. He always take care of me. You know, for many years that I taught class in Carson Gracie headquarters in Chicago. And I still, my relationship with him is, you know, is one of the best. So I have that guy as my master. You know, Gutenberg, of course, he's my man, you know, my professor who taught me everything, but unfortunately, I couldn't keep, because I move up here, I couldn't stay with him forever, you know what I mean? But every year I go back, I train with him. Our connection is still, like, the best, you know, me, him, and Junior, and those guys, I'm going to, you know, I'm on them, you know, I'm going to own those guys for the rest of my life. So everything I have, everything I know, you know, in jiu-jitsu and my personal life, I give all my gratitude for those guys.
And I know you're obviously incredibly humble. You want to, you know, pay respect to everybody that helped you, Gutenberg, Carlson Sr., Carlson Jr. But I want to remind everybody that you are outstanding on your own. Like, you've truly earned everything you have. I mean, you're not just a product of them, of what they did. Like, you are amazing. Like, between you and Fabio Prada, and with all due respect to you, Fabio is probably the nicest human being that ever lived. I don't think I've ever met anybody that's more happy than he is teaching everybody Team Alpha Male. Like, you guys are basically responsible for a lot of the jiu-jitsu at the biggest camps in the world right now. And I kind of wanted to ask, when you first started teaching everybody at Rufus Sport, obviously, you went from teaching people only jiu-jitsu to guys like Anthony Pettis, who he needed no jiu-jitsu, but he also, you know, had to fight, and it's a very different style. Did it take you time to kind of like adjust and figure out, oh, I need to train pro fighters in a different way than I would Mike Coughlin, the idiot down the street who just wants to, you know, roll a couple times a week?
Well, by the time that I was spent with Miguel, I learned a lot about MMA with Stefan, you know, with Carson. Carson was all about MMA. He always used to teach jiu-jitsu and always kind of giving the option, like, you know, and show us, oh, in MMA, that's what we do, you know. Like in jiu-jitsu, I'm going with the choke first, but MMA, I got to give some That's where I got my style from him, that I call the pojada style, you know, the ground and pound, the striking from everywhere, you know, and Duke's really like that. I had a great opportunity way before to go to Duke Roos. That's the time that I went to Duke, the Duke Academy with Uriah Faber, Joseph Benavides. So my friend Fabio Prada invited me for a couple camps, not a couple camps. Actually, I did like, I went there five times for five different camps, five camps. I helped when Uriah fought Dominique's, when Chad Mans fought Aldo first time, I was there. Not in the fight. I was in the camp, you know. It's like kind of Fabio brought me in just to have another black belt over right there. And then, you know, Fabio's kind of big dude, so he can, yeah. You know, it's not a good teammate for those little guys. So I was there rolling around and you know, kind of trying to, you know, iron sharp iron. So we was trying to help each other, and you know, that's when I started like more MMA. Actually, I have five pro fights, you know. When I fought the first time in Chicago, I promised Carson, because Carson asked me if I want to do MMA one day. And then I told Carson that I only want to do MMA when I earn my black belt, because I want to be good, really good in something before I step in a cage or in a ring. So he passed away before that, right? It was pretty short time. And I kind of felt like I was like, no, I got to do what I promised to Carson. So when Gutenberg promoted as a black belt and I came back here to teach, so I took my first fight, and actually that day I have this Carson's picture in my hand right after the fight. I finished my fight with the heel hook, and I believe it was 94 seconds, and I was happy to show his pictures, you know, kind of right. Raise his picture and show everybody in Chicago, like, and celebrate and give all the credit off that fight for him, because I kind of promised him. And that's how I start fighting. Now, my second fight, I had a little bad experience. Something that I already move on, you know, but I fought pretty tough dude, Derry Elks, and he's in UFC, still doing very well. I broke my hand in that fight. I kind of fought very well. I got him in a choke, so a lot of people saw, you know, seeing tapping on the choke, and then the referee stopped the fight, and they say he didn't tap. A referee started fight over again, so we keep fighting. At the end of the first round, my hand was really bad. I felt like my hand was like a 50 pounds, and I got a really bad fracture, so I couldn't continue the fight, so I lost the fight. But, you know, I didn't give up my career. I got a couple more fights, so I'm 3-2 in MMA, so I didn't go too far. But I kind of had experience before right. in MMA, and that's why I kind of, you know, I was able to handle those guys too, you know. So even though I have a lot of fights, but I can work with the guys like a Ben Askren and Anthony Pettis, you know, all those guys, like, you know, we are in an amazing level, you know what I mean? So we can give them a good show when we roll, and people like to see.
oh, for sure. And just to let everybody know, when he mentioned Darren Elkins, that was Darren Elkins, who is one of the best fighters in the world in the UFC.
Yes, he is. I got a lot of respect for that guy.
And he's a really good guy, a great fighter. But you basically choked him out, but the referee missed the tap. And which I just want people to know that, because that shows how good your jiu-jitsu is, because you're not a great striker or wrestler, but your jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, and I drop him and I knock him down with the punch. First punch, I knock him down. So I wish the promotion put that video on, but they never did, because that was a lot of controversy that night, because I remember I walk out as a loser, but everybody was booing the fight, and then everybody was telling me I won the fight. But anyways, this is like a...
These things
happen. Just live in the past. Yeah, I live in the past. And then, you know, I saw there later, you know, we never talking about, you know what I mean? So it just things that you got to move on, you know? So yeah. Everything happened for a reason. I really respect that dude. He's a great fighter. He's doing really well. He's, you know, like, I just wish him the best. I couldn't continue my career the way that I wanted, because I have kids really early. You know, my first kid, Daniel, I was 19. And I got a lot of responsibility, and I really like jiu-jitsu, you know. Like I said, I want to be a world champion. And August 25th, I'm going to be competing in World Masters, and I hope I can do my, you know, I can make my dream come true. And like I said, I just moving on, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It was good to have the experience to step in the ring a few times, and to know how to deal with MMA guys, you know, because it's a little different, you know, the jiu-jitsu with the gi, we use all the kind of the kimono, the philosophy, you know, and MMA is a little different. The guys don't want to follow that much the philosophy of jiu-jitsu. A few guys do jiu-jitsu with the kimono too, so they know what's going on, but the guys who don't put the kimono, they think a little different about. So that's why I don't like that people call me a coach when I teach jiu-jitsu gi. And when I'm in MMA class, okay, you can call me a coach. But when we're in a class like jiu-jitsu, we're in a kimono. So call me Professor Vanderlei.
Well, before I go any further, I really do, again, want everybody listening to go to your website, danielvanderlei.com. I'll have a link on the post here of the podcast and everything like that, to halfcredit.com. And, you know, any little bit of money you can donate, because you are somebody that, you know, I think a lot of people think that you make tons and tons of money, but you really don't. Like, you work hard, you can provide for your family, but you're not making millions of dollars a year.
Yes.
Even though you're...
Here's the thing. Behind the great fighters is a great staff of coaches, you know, but coaches is not a manager, you know what I mean? I'm just coaching. I got my salary. Rufus Sport, Duke can pay me well. I'm not, you know, I can't complain about, but the big money goes for the fighters for sure. I've never deal with the money with the fighters. So I teach classes, you know what I mean? Like I teach the pro team, I teach kids, I teach adults. So I'm just a Rufus Sport, a professor, head coach. So the fighters don't really, when we do something in the side, they pay me for private lessons, but you know, most of the fighters just take the pro team, the pro classes, and work, you know. So, as I can say, I don't make that money that people think I make, because people say, you know, when people see me on TV, you know, I was in a youth May fighter with the Team Pettis, you know, the season 20 with all the girls, you know, and people saw me on TV and they kind of had a different idea, you know, they think we're making a lot of money. And as well, I was a special guest at the season 15 was Uriah Faber versus right. Dominic Cruz. Actually, that was what I put my choke back Thursday.
Yes, I
picture
just,
about that.
That
was
that,
pretty
yeah.
fun. I just found that picture too, and then it's kind of good memories, you know, like good times. I deal with all those guys that now they're on the top, you know. I rode with Michael Chiesa. He's fighting now with Tony Ferguson. Then it was an amazing time. Cristiano Marcelo, man, all, you know, all the Team Faber now doing pretty good. Derek Cruikshank, you know, that I have opportunity to coach against him later. Right. So it's kind of small world, man.
Yeah, and,
but definitely what you say is true. It's like as a coach, I don't make that money that people think that I make, you know what I mean? But, you know, I can't complain about life. God's good to me. Every time that somebody closed the door, he opened the window. And, you know, I'm just doing better little by little, you know, just trying to, you know, like I say, I'm just a man trying to improve in the life, you know, trying to get better. And
For sure. And I kind of wanted to ask you, you teach multiple classes every day. You probably train, 12, 15 classes every week at least, you know, pros, children, everything. And you're also training for the world championships. How difficult is it for you to balance training for yourself so that you can be the best you can be, like you can be the best jiu-jitsu guy, while also understanding that you have pro fighters that you need to take care of? I don't think a lot of people know just how difficult that is, because you are, you know, you're a world-class athlete. At the same time, you're also a world-class trainer.
Yes. Well, when I won a Pan American twice, I had really a good training camp. I was teaching a lot of classes as well, but was straight jiu-jitsu. So all those guys, all about straight jiu-jitsu. I have some good teammates that helped me out, you know what I mean, and then make me get in the point that I got, you know, to win the bigger tournaments. Recently, when I placed second at the Worlds 2014, I did very well, but I kind of like no gi a lot, you know. That was makes it a little easy to and train with the fighters, but it's different, you know, when you have black belts to train with you,
yeah.
And when you have tough guys always push you hard. But the jiu-jitsu, the straight jiu-jitsu guys, they roll different, you know, they fight different. So they go for, you know, the specific, like, jiu-jitsu tournament with all the IBJJF rules. That's the federation that I follow,
right.
You know, and I'm part of, you know what I mean? And that's kind of make a little hard. But at the same time, I got guys who are improving a lot, you know, all my new generation at the Rufus Sports. So my students doing very well. I just got recently, like, a few black belts coming by to train with us, and then, man, my blue and purple and brown belts give them a really hard time, as well in the fight world. So Duke Roof is very famous, and a lot of people come by to visit us. So we get people coming from all over the world, you know. So it's like, I never know when some black belt's going to knock on the door and then be around, so I got to be ready to roll with those guys. I got Marcin held another day. Actually, a little bit over a year ago, I had the opportunity to expand a few months, you know, with him. He came by to Rufus Sports to do his camp, and he was put the kimono up, you know, and trained with me. Actually, we went in a jiu-jitsu competition together, and it was pretty fun. You know, I helped him out to win the lightweight tournament in the Bellator when he beat Patrick Pitbull. That was great. That was in his corner. And, you know, the other guys too, man. Mike Big Rose doing really good now. My man Emmanuel Sanchez, man, he had an amazing jiu-jitsu too. He just showed his last fight, man, all the scramble. And, you know, this guy's purple belts. Eric Koch just finished his fight, man, and with an amazing choke. And thank God he remembered where he come from. He right away gave me a shout out. And that makes me be very proud. You know, those guys like Eric Koch, actually, he's a purple belt, but he kind of have a black belt level. He can work with the black belts in the same, you know, in the same level. So I'm happy to have those guys with me and pushing me hard. And one day I hope I can make them be in the black belts and, you know, and just help me out to be a better black belt.
Yeah, it's funny because, again, like, I train with you for years, and I train with Carlson Jr. right now. And I'll watch, especially, you know, Emmanuel Sanchez in particular. I see him training. I see him fighting in Bellator. And it's funny because I can see, like, oh, my gosh, that's what Daniel taught. I can see the way that you've taught these guys. I'm like, holy shit, he taught me that. I can't do it like he can do it. But, you know, man, he's outstanding. And I think, you know, especially Manny, I think he's one of these guys in a couple of years people are going to look and go,
yes, like, many compete in jiu-jitsu tournaments. Mike Big Road just won IBJJF as a purple belt, as a blue belt as well too. He's kind of those guys, you know. It's just some people have more opportunity and they can do more classes, you know. Some guys live a little far away. Some guys make the big drive, you know. Now recently too, my man Bilal Muhammad just signed up with the UFC.
Right.
He come by, he put the kimono. He's only blue belt, but man, he's a monster, man. And so I'm happy. And then he did the IBJJF as well. I'm so happy to the guys just embracing the gi game and improving, man, being a better fighter, be a complete fighter, you know, because at the end of the day, there's only two ways to finish fights, you know. Or you finish fight by striking or finish fight by submission. So I don't see many people finish fight by takedowns, but the takedowns what bring the guys to the ground to use your round the pound, your jiu-jitsu. But it's only two ways to finish a fight. You know, I think everybody agree with me. So by sub or by TKO or a KO, you know.
And you mentioned training in the gi, the kimono, and you obviously have and everybody wants to hear about it, so I should just ask the stupid question. You have a very, very famous student training with you right now in CM Punk, who trained with the, I think it was Henrik Gracie for a while, but he's only a one-stripe white belt, but obviously he's trained for a long time. What has it been like to train with CM Punk? How have you felt about CM Punk's attitude?
Punk is amazing, man. I don't follow much the WWE, you know. When CM Punk walked in the gym, I kind of met him, you know. I didn't know who he was, you know. And, hey, man, what's up? How you doing? And what's your name? He told me, like, oh, I'm Phil Brooks. I'm like, I never called him CM Punk at the beginning. So I didn't know, you know. But at the beginning, he didn't want to put the kimono, the gi, you know. It was fine to me, you know. Like, dude, I respect everybody, you know. I kind of, I know how to deal with all the kind of, you know, fighters, you know. And he, like, You just made, like, he's won his stripe. He just earned his second stripe last week.
Good for him.
I didn't post anything about, but he's 2-stripe white belt. But of course, CM Punk has a different level, you know.
Yeah.
He's, it's just like, I cannot just go forward and promote somebody to blue belt if they don't really do my class. And CM Punk now, he's doing amazing, man. He's in class every day. If you see, like, you know, I used to post a lot of pictures with him. And recently, I don't do, like, really, like, a single, like, just me and him on the picture. I do group picture, a lot of group picture, a lot of videos. And you're always going to see CM Punk in my class. Almost every day, I go live on Facebook, and I put the live class. If you look around, you're going to see CM Punk in the back. So I'm very happy to see Phil really embracing the gi too. Like, man, he's just moving a lot better. He recently got hurt, you know, and he got surgery. So he got back, and little by little now he started doing really good, man. And I'm so happy to be part of that progress, you know. He's just like
In case CM Punk is listening right now, I would like to just say, for the record, Daniel gave me my 4th stripe on my blue belt, so I'm actually better than you right now, Punk. If you want to fight, like, I'll fight in the UFC, you know, whatever. You know, I'm just saying, like, okay, he probably beat the hell out of me, but, you know, without giving away too much, there's talk that he may be fighting in a couple of months for his UFC debut. You've obviously been with him since he first started at Rufus Sport. Have you seen just, has he really improved just a great?
Yeah, this dude is a sponge, man. He's actually, if I didn't know, like, if I knew him before, I probably would treat him a little different, but I didn't know about the WWE. And he just, like, very humble and, you know, like, when I realize and I look at his Twitter and I see how many followers he has, you know, I'm like, oh my God, this guy's like, this is really famous.
Yes.
You know, everybody started hitting me up. I got people who message me all the time about Punk all the time. And I just kind of going crazy with that now, you know, but he just like, man, he just, I think he likes because the way that I treat him, I just treat him like a regular dude, you know what
right.
I mean? Another guy from the gym, and we have a great relationship now, you know. I think he's really embracing me as his professor. I know he trained with Hannah Gracie before, and what's good for him to get the opportunity, but when he rolled with me the first time, I didn't know, you know, he's just a big dude, strong, and then kind of look, you know, strong, and Duke say, Daniel, can you test this guy? I say, okay,
oh,
I can.
No.
So we went a little, you know, let me, I put a little hard on Punk, and he went hard on me too, you know, and he kind of figured it out. Man, your style is pretty good. I said, man, this is a Carson Gracie style. The Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, of course, you know, is everybody from Gracie family came from the same Jiu-Jitsu, but Carson has this little, like, every time I put the jiu-jitsu position, you know, before I go for submission, I always trying to show them how to hit people, you know, like, stay busy with the hands because, you know, when you ground and pound someone, it opens a lot more opportunities to apply your submission. So he really liked it. And, you know, since day one, he kind of, you know, he was happy to, he didn't switch his, he's a professor. He just kind of, you know, he went through Hannah because he knew him before.
Of course.
But when he realized he's going to do his camp here and he moved up to Wisconsin, he lives in Wisconsin right now. He has an apartment here. You know, he's training every day, man. I'm so happy for Punk. I'm very proud of him. And, you know, I don't know when he's going to fight. People say he's going to fight in 201, 202, you know, a lot of rumors around.
Right.
But the truth is, not even Punk know yet. So he's getting ready, you know what I mean? He's doing a lot of a regular class. At the beginning, we worked in a lot of privates, me and him. He was working with private with Duke as well, a lot of privates. And then Coach Cushman as well is our boxing coach. And, you know, it was all about me and Cush and Duke. I believe, like, you know, on the UFC debut, that's all, you know, who's going to be in his corner. So probably going to be me and him and Coach Cushman. I'm not sure. So just saying now, but I believe that's what, you know, the people that he trusts, the people that he's training now. And now he work in class with us. Like, he taking two or three different classes every day. So I'm very proud of CM Punk.
And it's funny, like, he's basically, in pro wrestling, he's as popular as Brock Lesnar, and you didn't even know who he was. And so you were training like the small version of Brock Lesnar, and you didn't know who he was, which is crazy.
Yes, you're right. That's true.
You know, we're coming up on an hour here, so we shouldn't go too much longer. I know you have a wife and children to get back to and all that. But, I know, nobody wants to talk to their wife, but you got to do it.
No, don't worry about it. That's fine. We're good.
I know. What do you think, as far as in your career, what has been like what's been the most memorable highlight as far as competing and as far as training people? Like, when have you felt the most proud training somebody when they won something, and what was the most proud victory that you had?
Well, definitely my Pan Ams in 2010 was the best tournament because I faced this guy in the final, the guy who beat me before, and that was one, of course, one of the great moments in my life, you know what I mean, that I could pay back and I become a Pan American champion for the first time. I was, you know, that was an amazing day as an athlete, you know what I mean, as a competitor. So that was one of those days I will never forget about. As a coach, you know, being worked with a lot of guys, you know, of course, I make my son won the 4 world titles in jiu-jitsu. That's, you know, it's amazing too. My little guy, Gabriel Wonderly, he's only 14-year-old, but he won the worlds. It's just the kids' worlds, but still, he fought kids all over the world. You know, kids from Italy, Guatemala. You know, I'm very proud of this little guy, and he fought Pancration already. That Pancration is like kind of MMA for kids. You know, he won his first fight, and I'm very proud of him. But of course, a big accomplishment, you know, like I help one of our former fighters, Ricky Glantz, who won the world title in the World Series of Fighting. Eventually, Anthony Pettis, I was part of the camp when he became the UFC champion. I did the whole camp. I don't know if you guys remember, but he hurt himself 2 weeks before the fight. He dislocated his shoulder. That actually was mean, you know. I took him down, and somehow he just fell on his shoulder and kind of hurt him. Was an accident, of course, you know. I was just trying to give my best to him dude to win the title. And I didn't corner him that night because he was promised somebody before. And I was cool with that. I cornered Chico Camus that night. Chico Camus was the first fighter who put me in the UFC. That's another thing that I won't forget, you know, for the rest of my life. He's not in the UFC now, but he's doing very good. And he's going to bounce back because he's looking better than ever. But definitely when Anthony defended his title against Gilbert Melendez, man, we worked in the guillotine like for so long, and the best proof ever is like the Reebok video on YouTube. You can go right there and trying to find that video. You will see Reebok 2 weeks before the fight. They came by the gym and they was recording us, and they recorded when I showed the technique. So we was working a guillotine, and 2 weeks later, Anthony was able to pull that guillotine and finish Gilbert Melendez.
It's so many
people like that. I help him out, you know.
Well, I remember
Ben Askren as well. You know, like even I never cornered him. He like I helped him to win the ONE FC title. You know, and Singapore, you know, he went there and he put like, you know, I remember before he wasn't able to finish fights, you know what I mean? And later he started putting the ground and pound hard, the submissions, and, you know, I was happy to be part of that too. And so many fighters, man. Sergio Pettis is the new talent, you know, amazing kid, you know. Eric Koch, man, I love that dude, man. That's one of my favorite style fighters too. He's one of the best grapplers in the gym. Manuel Sanchez, but the biggest ones, of course, was the titles, you know. But watch my man, Manuel Sanchez, man. He's number 5 in the rank now. He's fighting the number 3 on Bellator featherweight. So being in the number 3, he's going to be probably a title challenger. And man, I just want to help that dude to win the title. And, you know, because Emmanuel, I was with Emmanuel when he was fighting in the small shows here in Wisconsin. And, well, of course, my man, Eric Koch, too, man. Don't forget about this guy. He's supposed to fight Aldo back in the days. You know, he went to Brazil. He faced off against Aldo, but an injury took him out of the fight. You know, my man, Mike Big Rose, coming from, he's fighting 2 weeks for the Victory FC title now. I helped Mike to win the RFA title, 170 pounds, against Alan Joban, who was doing pretty good in the UFC. And, you know, and now he's going to go bounce it back to you, man. That's going to be, he won three in a row now, winning this title. I believe that's going to put Mike Bigelow back in UFC, and we can't wait to see him back. You know, he looked better than ever, too. My man Chico fighting for the title, RFA. So I'm busy, man, this month and the next month. I'm cornering one of my guys tomorrow night on the PFC small show here, but my man Craig, the Captain American, next week, we got people fighting RFA in Indiana, two of our fighters, Dog and OD, man, and week after is going to be Biggie and another guy. So July, we have this new talent too, Rafian, man, you got to see this guy. He's a 2-time national champion in wrestling D2, but this kid is amazing. He's at 5-0. We have so many new guys, man. That's like, you know, I can't just focus on someone, you know, and just one or two guys, because we have, I'm like a team, you know, like I really work with the team. I'm not working for someone, you know what I mean? Like, of course, the UFC is the best show.
Right.
I was very happy to be part of that with Anthony. But, you know, I'm looking forward to making other guys get in that same spot. You know, guys there that I start from the bottom. You know, Anthony, when I get there, he was already champion. What means, like, you know, I help him out for sure, but I can't get all the credit. You know, I give all this credit for my man Duke Roofs. And, you know, but definitely I'm looking forward to the future, man. So me and Duke, we really work very hard to get those guys, you know, and make a new champion. That's, you know, that's what we do, you know, not just trying to be a world champion, but I want to make more world champions.
Right. It's funny because when you mentioned, especially when Anthony Pettis beat Gilbert Melendez, I was there that night, and the day before that fight happened, you, me, and my friend Tony were sitting and we were having breakfast, and you were talking about how you had gone over the guillotine over and over with Anthony Pettis, and I, like, you kept telling me he's got this great guillotine, and then he used it and choked out Gilbert Melendez, and all I could think of is, holy shit, like, this is exactly what you said would happen. It was incredible, to, like, you know, as your friend and somebody watching it, but, like, you had truly, like, I don't want to say you taught him the guillotine, but you were obviously, in some respects, responsible for him winning one of the biggest fights of his life.
Yeah, of course, when you trust in your coach, you know, I saw Anthony doing very well the guillotine in practice, and I was telling him, dude, believe in your move, you know, believe he's going to try and take you down, and the neck's going to be right there. You just got to catch him on the right time, you know, and believe that you're going to be able to finish this guy. And, you know, he did, man. He's, you know, he's amazing now. He's coming out, you know, from three losses, but, you know, I think he's just got to get the things together. And, you know, he's in Albuquerque right now. I don't know what's going on. Like I said, man, I work for the team. I don't work for fighters.
Right.
My work's like is every day, you know, being a roofer sport. So the guys who been there and train with us, you know, that's the, you know, we always look for the next guy. We always look for the next guy.
Right.
It was so funny too. Eric Cox just won his fight with the choke. I show him the grip way back, but 2 weeks before the fight. And then a week before, I focus a lot on the back takes and MMA back takes, because when you take somebody's back, you have like the percentage of finish the fights, it's really big, you know. So it's
Damian
a money
Maya.
Move. I call that money. Exactly. That's my, I love Jacare, but Damian Maya is my, you know, he's one of my favorite guys because he always looking for the backpack, man. I was make fun of the other day because I searched his name on the Google, and then I saw a few of his pictures, you know, doing the chokes in front of the back, and then what pops up was a UFC backpack, and then that was pretty funny, you know. So I like that dude a lot. I wish he could make one day, you know, fight for the title again, but now it's you know, it. He's there. He's close, but
it's gonna be Tyrone Woodley.
Woodley. Yeah, I'm just gonna talk about that right now. He was in my class the other day on I believe it was Tuesday. Yeah, Tuesday he was in class, and I want to say, you know, Ty worked with Duke now. I don't know what's going on with his corner staff. You know what I mean? Like
right.
Who's gonna bring with? But he's from America Top Team. But he's fighting an American Top Team guy now. I'm really good friend with all those guys, American Top Team, Ricardo Laborio, Kona, you know, all those guys. We get, you know, we have a good relationship because we all come from Carson Gracie, you know, and I just don't know what's going on. I wish my man Woodley win because he's a great guy, man. He's humble too. You know, he put the kimono with me a few months ago. He was training the gi, and he sounds like, you know, really respectful and a real true martial artist. You know, he deserves to be the next champion, and he's just gonna have a top fight coming, you know, but he can take it. He's a tough dude. He's a fight finisher, you know. He being finished a lot of fights, a lot of tough dudes, and they definitely have a big chance to win and becoming the welterweight champion of the world
for sure. And I guess now for the last question I'll ask, so we can wrap this up here, because, again, you have a wife and child, and you have to do these things and be a dad and all that shit. If you could compete in jiu-jitsu against anybody throughout history, who would you want to compete against?
Well, back in the days, I had this, you know, this big dream to compete against Marcelo Garcia, because he's one of my favorite fighters as well, you know, in jiu-jitsu. But now it's just, man, so many good guys, man. You know, I want to feel like I wish I could fight Leandro Lowe. You know, he's, you know, amazing. You know, his moves, like his style. So the style that I like it, and I want the feeling, you know what I mean? But I just, like, getting old, you know, I'm 36 now. Those guys, like, younger than me, they train so hard. They don't have to teach, like, you know, I teach, like, some days 5-6 classes a day. Today was my day off, actually, a Friday, but I taught 3 classes. So 3 private lessons. So with the, you know, good people around, I can say no sometimes, you know, especially like when you need to make a little extra money. And, you know, I was like, I wish I could fight someone like, you know, but that would be like Leandro Lowe, you know, just, I don't think I can beat him, you know what I mean? I just want to feel him and his pressure, you know, all the, like, his style. And that would be a great opportunity
I know you want to be respectful, so I'll say it. Leandro Lowe, Marcelo Garcia, you guys suck. Daniel can beat your ass. Anytime you want to compete, why don't you just show up at, why don't you show up at the UFC Fight Week in UFC 200, and Daniel will whoop your ass, Marcelo Garcia. Come on, do it, you coward. Are you afraid of Daniel Vandalay? He trains world champions. I don't see Marcelo Garcia having any world champions in the UFC. So, please nobody hurt me. I'm nobody. Daniel's really good. Just fight him instead. But
like I say, I really respect those guys. And, you know, back in the days, Marcelo was one of my favorites, you know, because I'm just putting the guys in my weight class, middleweight. Yeah. You know what I mean? Leandro Lowe actually did the middle heavy this year. He won in the middle heavy at the Worlds. But, you know, I see him on the lightweight tournament before in the middleweight, and man, he moves like, man, he moved the way that I wish I could move.
Oh, well, I can say I have rolled with, and it's because of you, I have rolled with the greatest in the world. I've rolled with Fabio Prada. I've rolled with Uriah Faber. I've rolled with you. I've rolled with, you pretty much name it, Bushesha. And you're right there with all of those guys. You are truly one of the greatest jiu-jitsu fighters on earth, and I personally think you're the greatest teacher. I know I'm biased. I admit it. You were at my wedding with my ex-wife who destroyed my life. Fuck that bitch. Who cares? But but as we wrap this up, just tell everybody, you know, how they can reach you and follow you on Twitter, Facebook, your website. Just kind of let everybody know a little bit how they can reach and get out and help support your dreams of becoming a world champion.
Yes, I have my coach page on Facebook, and I'm Daniel Vandalay. My Twitter is Daniel SWBJJ. Twitter as well, Instagram, Twitter is the same. You can, you know, follow me. You know, you're gonna see great pictures and videos, technique videos that I always share. My techniques, you know, that's a good way to people kind of. And know a little bit of my style, you know, always put some picture with the, what's going on, videos with the fighters, you know, not just techniques, but, eventually, like when we training, you know, like a little part of the camp, you know what I mean? Like, you know, follow me, and you guys, I promise you guys gonna like it, because it's all cool stuff that I post, all positive things, you know. Follow as well, Rufus Boy, Carson Gracie, because this is all part of me and all part of my team, you know what I mean? And that's it, man. Just, you know, I wish you guys the best, you know, for everybody, and then I hope, you know, meet more people, you know, getting more popular, getting more followers, you know, and that's it. Yeah. I hope you guys like the interview, and thank you for having me here today, you know, and it was a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh,
and you know,
the pleasure is all mine. Again, you know, halfcredit.com is incredibly honored to have you as our I'll say our first major guest we've ever had. Again, it's Daniel Vondelay. I'm going to have all the links up at halfguarded.com if you want to follow him. He does, you know, live video on Facebook of the training. You'll see all kinds of techniques. I know every Wednesday they have Vondelay Wednesday with you and Duke Rufus showing techniques. And
I'm also doing my association right now, my affiliates, Vondelay Jiu-Jitsu. My name is Daniel Vondelay, but we focus on the Vondelay name now, Vondelay Jiu-Jitsu. Duke Roof called me the Recife Shark. Recife is the city where I'm coming from, where I born and grow up. And then it was pretty fun because I just made a new logo with the shark now, you know, and then everybody really liked that. And, you know, we're just trying to develop that. My style, like I said, the Carson Gracie style, the porrada, the ground and pound, Jiu-Jitsu with the ground and pound. People really like that, the Vondelay Wednesday. So thank Mike, thank the Duke Roof for giving the opportunity, Carson Gracie Jr., those guys, I love you guys. And, you know, hope you guys, whoever listens to me right now, come by one day to Chicago or Milwaukee, and then our door is open for you guys. You know, you guys welcome.
All right. Again, thank you, Daniel Vondelay. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And, you know, visit DanielVondelay.com, Facebook, Twitter. Visit halfguarded.com because I love attention as well. And again, thank you to Daniel for doing this. Everybody listening, this will be the end of the podcast. So thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you again sometime in the future.
Aggressively, we all defend the role we play. Regrettably, times come to send you on your way. We've seen it all, bonfires of trust, flash floods of pain. It doesn't really matter, don't you worry, it'll all work out. No, it doesn't even matter, don't you worry, that ain't what it's all about. We hope.